Please turn back now with me to Proverbs chapter 22. A couple of weeks ago, we began to look at a theme which we're pursuing this morning again of life. I'm just calling this series Lifeline. We're looking at human life right from the beginning to the end and see what the Bible has to say. And we thought about conception. And we thought about life in the womb, we thought about gestation. And today I want to think about, now that the baby's born, I want to think about infancy and childhood, really the first sort of 12 years of life. And when I was preaching this in Kyle this morning, I was thinking to myself, yeah, this is not a subject I would normally choose to preach on. And that's the value of doing a series, really. It forces people like me to tackle things that they maybe don't feel particularly comfortable about. And it also maybe forces the congregation to think about things that they might not normally think about. So we're thinking about this period of when children are young. And we're going to look at two verses in Proverbs 22. Verse 6, first of all, where it says, "Train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it." And then in verse 15, it says, "Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him." So we thought about the wonder of conception and of the developing life in the womb, but now the baby's born, and the midwife hands you your newborn son or daughter. What a moment that is, isn't it? What a great moment. I'm looking around and I'm saying, actually, quite a lot of what I'm going to be saying today is for parents, but I guess most of you are past that stage. And maybe you're dealing with children as grandparents now, and actually everything we say is every bit as relevant to grandparents. But what do you do with that baby? And you, well, first of all, you look at it, don't you, and you think, isn't it wonderful? You see all the tiny little features, and maybe you say, who does he or she look like? And everything goes well for a moment. And then it starts to cry. It starts to bellow. And there's the usual comment about a good pair of lungs and all the rest of it. What do you do now with that little bundle? Well, if you're a new parent, you might panic. You might say, midwife, what next? Or if you're in a context where there's maybe grannies or grandpas around, they'll give some advice. But in a sense, it's quite simple in those first few months, usually. If everything's healthy and well, then when the baby cries, there's only a few things really that can be wrong. It might be a little bit of wind, or it might be a dirty nappy, or it might be a bit of hunger, or the baby's not warm enough, or cold enough, or it's too cold, or whatever. Simple things. And you can deal with them. And your role there at that early stage is just simply to love them, to nurture them, to care for them, and to supply the needs that they have, protect them. It's demanding. It's tiring. But you're very much in charge. And it's just a case of understanding those little signals that the child gives. Until one day, you discover that that little baby has a will. That little bundle has a will. And what you think about the will of that little baby will have a huge say in what happens for the rest of that baby's life and for the rest of your life as a parent as well. What kind of will does a little child have? Today, the answer that most people seem to give to that question is that the heart of a little child is pure and good and always wants the right thing. That children are innately good. So all you need to do is give a child a good environment and surround it with good examples, and the little child will grow up angelic and sweet until ultimately it becomes an angelic teenager, an angelic adult, because the little darlings are innately good. That's the parenting theory that seems to prevail today. And it's really strange that it does prevail in a world that is so scientific, because science is based on evidence, and there's very little evidence that the little darlings are innately good. There's a problem. If you do believe that your children are innately good, and the problem is, who to blame when they start misbehaving? Because they will start misbehaving. Well, if you believe that your little children are innately good, then it's not their fault. Whose fault is it? Well, it's got to be the parents' fault. Parents are therefore made to bear the blame for the children's behaviour, so that when you're in the co-op and your little darling is writhing on the floor, creating an absolute havoc, screaming dribbling and wailing because you wouldn't give them a sweetie, you're to blame. It's not their fault. It's not that they're doing wrong. You're the parent. They're innately good. So therefore it's your fault as a parent. You're a bad parent. And to compound that, you'll have people frowning at you down the aisles of the co-op. What a terrible parent you are. And so parents tend to grow with their kids into a sense of perpetual guilt, because their kids do not turn out as little angels, always sweet and demure and behaving in the perfect way. And all because we fail to understand a very simple thing. It's put very briefly in verse 15. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child. We sang it in Psalm 51. David says, "Surely I was sinful at birth, sinful from the time my mother conceived me." This is a really devastating fact, but it's a real truth of the heart of a child, that little will is a sinful will. That little will is a will that desires to make the world revolve around itself. Paul, the apostle, will describe human nature using the word the flesh. And he speaks about the works of the flesh. And you can find these in even small children. Impurity, idolatry, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition. And children's natures are inherently addictive natures. And they will desire things that make them feel good and easily form addictions. So that has to be taken account of if we're actually going to do well for our children when we're bringing them up. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child. That little angel. When I look back at photographs of me when I was 7 years old, oh, I look so sweet. So I do. There's hair for a start, a lovely head of hair. And I look, you know, so everyone says, oh, what a bonny wee boy. Such a nice boy. When I was 7 years old, I can still remember it. It's one of these memories that's very vivid. I was standing beside the bath in our house in Gerloch, and the bath was getting filled up by my mother. And my mother said to me, your brother's coming to visit. And I said, my brother? I didn't know I had a brother. And neither I did. I have a brother, he's a half-brother, he's a lot older than me, and if I'd ever known that I had him, I'd forgotten all about him. So, for me, an only child, as it seemed, who had the world revolving around me, discovering that I had a brother was a bit of a shock. Do you mean I've got to share my life with someone else? Do you know what I said to my mother? Your brother's coming to stay. I said, I'll kill him. That's what I said to her. I'll kill him. What a little angel I was, wasn't I? What's going on there? Well, that's the works of the flesh. What Paul describes, jealousy. You know, that's selfish ambition, hatred, discord. It's all there, and it was in my heart when I was 7 years old. And probably all of you can identify with that in different ways. Last time, was it last week, week before, when we were thinking about children in the womb, we were thinking about two children in the womb. Remember, John and John the Baptist and Jesus. And in Luke chapter 1, we read that John the Baptist grew and became strong in spirit. We can identify with that. John the Baptist was a headstrong young lad. He was willful. But then we also read about Jesus. It says, Jesus the child grew and became strong physically. He was filled with wisdom and the grace of God was upon him. What a contrast. It also says in Luke that Jesus was obedient to his parents. And I was talking about that with the children and Kyle this morning. And it was a bit of a shock to the kids to think, wow, do you mean you can be 12 years old and obey your parents? The kids didn't seem to think that was very likely. Well, there's such a contrast, isn't there, between John the Baptist, this willful child we can identify with, who's like us. As we grow, we want our will to be done. And Jesus, who is happy for his Father in heaven's will to be done, and to obey his parents' will as well. And that's why we, even as children, we need forgiveness. We need God's forgiveness. We need salvation, even as children. So, it's important, if we're going to parent or grandparent effectively, that we recognise the true nature of children. I didn't say that children are demons. I didn't say they're as bad as they possibly could be. But I said, left to themselves, they will be willful. And they won't always choose what is right. So, to help them to do so, what do we need to do? Well, verse 6 says, train a child in the way he should go. Train them. Children need training. You can't leave them to make their own choices. Because if you leave them to do what they want, they will tyrannize you as parents or even as grandparents. And of course, we know, we see that often where parents say, I just need to find out what my wee daughter or my wee son wants and they'll be happy. Just give them what they want and they'll be happy. Well, what they really want is to tyrannize you. What they really want is to make you their slave. That's what children want. They want parents to be slaves. Pester power. And parents that try and keep their kids happy are in a really bad place. And their kids are in a bad place too. because they're not actually going to help the children to develop discipline. Children need to be trained. And that's tough. And it takes tough love. It takes courage. If you're going to not only reward your children for good, but punish them for bad, if you're not only going to encourage them when they're doing well, but also warn them when they're not, if you're going to teach them by precept and example, it takes tough love. It's not caving in that makes a good parent or a good grandparent. It's standing up to the children and saying, well, you may think this is what you need and that this is what's best for you, but I, as your parent, know that that's not the case, and I will enforce what is good for you and what's right for you. But it's obviously got to be done in love. There are many, many problems developing in our society for our children, which are due to a lack of this training. Whether it is, health problems, or obesity and a whole range of other problems are largely due to a failure of parenting. Not always, and we can't be judgmental in this. We mustn't be. But children will become addictive and will be addicted to things unless their parents have the discipline to help the children to make right choices. So you can't rely on a child to eat what's best for them. You can't rely on a child to choose what's best company. You can't rely on a child to choose what's the best television programs to watch, because they're not innately good. They'll choose wrong things and they'll form addictions. So parents need to train children. That's the word, train them, discipline them. So when they're very, very young and they're crying, well, it's easy. You're giving them what they need. But the time comes when you discover that will, and when the crying isn't because the nappy's dirty, but the crying is because the child is beginning to discover that they can make you do what they want. Very basic, very, very primitive sense at that stage, but they simply want to have you for themselves. So the example that's often given is, what do you do with a child who cries at bedtime? So you put the child down, the little child down, and they cry. You know there's nothing wrong with them, or you have a sense that that's the case. They're just crying for attention. They're just crying because they want to have you. Well, you think that, you know, many parents think, oh, poor wee soul, and they pick the child up straight away. And then they settle it, and then they put it down, and it starts crying again, and they pick the child up straight away. What's happening in that situation is the child is learning, if I make a fuss, I get my way. It's very basic at that stage, but that's what's happening. So, you know, applying what we're saying here is, you've got to train the child. You're in charge. When you put them down and they cry, don't pick them up straight away. Maybe wait till there's a lull in the crying, and then maybe just give them a bit of reassurance. But if you continually try to keep them happy, you'll be making a rod for your own back, a lifelong rod. What children need to learn is there are wills other than their own will. Greater wills. The will of the parent is greater than the will of the child. They need to learn that there are wills when they grow up that will be greater. There will be wills in the playground, wills in the place of employment, wills in civil society, and more than anything, the will of God. Discipline your son, Proverbs 19, verse 18. For in that there is hope. Do not be a willing party to his death. Strong words. without discipline, you are actually sentencing your child to death. Premature, perhaps, but spiritual death as well. One of the great responsibilities of being parents is we get the privilege of helping our children to discover that they have to take a place in a world in which there are wills other than their own, which they will have to submit to, which they will have to work alongside, and that they live in God's world, and God's will is greater than all. So this will sometimes entail punishment. Verse 15, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. Punishment. One of the things that children do need to learn, and we all need to recognise, is that sin gets punished. Very simply. I mean, God has promised that. God has promised to punish sin. And we're seeking to teach ultimately our children to recognise God's rule in their lives. Sin gets punished. Clearly here, what we would call corporal punishment is in view. Corporal punishment. But the mention here of the rod gets many people's hackles up. And of course, if you were to use a rod in Scotland today, you'd be breaking the law. Many of us were brought up facing the wrath of parents at the other end of a spoon or a belt or a slipper or whatever. That's actually illegal in our country today, but that doesn't mean that we cannot discipline our children. It's still recognised that parents have the right to smack, but in the right way. And this is where perhaps we need to recognise that the discipline that's mentioned in verse 15 isn't just the discipline of the children. It's the discipline of the parents. Parents need discipline if they're going to discipline their children. And that means you cannot discipline your child when you're in a rage. You can't discipline them when what you do in response to whatever wrong they've done is disproportionate, particularly if it's too harsh. The kind of discipline that's required, first of all, is discipline of parents who say, if you do that, I will do this. Where the wrong that you're saying, if they do, will be met with a punishment that is, it's not excessive, it's just appropriate to what they've done wrong. And that we carry that out and no more. And the reason why we're doing that, partly, is so that, well, obviously, when the children are growing up, they're going to have to learn that if they don't listen to warnings, bad things happen. And I mean, it's not just the simple things like, this is hot, don't touch it. But it's also the warnings that come, for example, from the law, or the warnings that come from those who advise us about our health, or whatever it is. Don't listen to the warnings, bad things happen. But ultimately, we're trying to teach them to respect God's warnings, and that God also disciplines. Remember Jesus' words in the book of Revelation, chapter 2, he says, I will repay each of you according to your deeds. Jesus is telling us he will discipline. Those whom I love, I rebuke and discipline. Revelation chapter 3. Those whom I love, I rebuke and discipline. So that we are actually learning in teaching our children about discipline, we're actually learning ultimately to respect God's discipline. Because what everyone in this world is going to experience, whether they're ready for it or whether they recognize it or whether they even believe in it or not, is that God will punish sin. So Proverbs 13 verse 24, he who spares the rod, he who doesn't chastise, hates his son, but he who loves him is careful to discipline him. Okay, so discipline is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It's an expression of love. It's an expression of care for the whole well-being of our children, so that they can grow up to take their place, not only in society or in the workplace or in family, the larger family circle, or in the playground or whatever, but so that they can grow up and take their place before God. And in the end, it's all about safety. Because children need boundaries. You can ask that of any teacher. If children don't think that there's discipline in the school, they're afraid. Because the bullies get the upper hand. They need boundaries. It's a bit like yesterday. Imagine trying to drive over the Sky Bridge yesterday. If there was no pavement and no fence, no railing. It's just the road, and then it just dropped off. Would you do it? We need boundaries. Boundaries keep us safe. So children need to know what we think about their language, what we think about their obedience, about saying please or thank you, or about how much time they spend on their computers or on their screens, and when it is time to go to bed and all the rest of it. Because if they don't have boundaries, they'll feel like you'd feel driving over the Sky Bridge without the railings. Safety. And finally, really, it's about the safety of the gospel. Because even as little children, they go wrong. Folly is bound up in their hearts. And they will disobey. They will disobey their parents. And parents who say about their children, I'm just leaving them to make up their own minds, are doing a great disservice to their children. Because if you leave a child to make up their own mind about right and wrong and about Jesus, what you're really saying is right and wrong isn't important. Jesus isn't important. But children, actually, because they do wrong, need to know that it's wrong, and they need to know that they need forgiven when they do wrong. They need to know that they need Jesus. They need a Saviour. They need that Jesus died on a cross for their sins. And training them in the way that they should go means telling them not only what's right and wrong, disciplining them when they need it, but it also means telling them that they need God's forgiveness, and that there is a Father in heaven who is the best of all, who is inconceivably wonderful in his fatherhood, but who isn't a soft touch. If we're going to live in his family, we need to respect him. And we need to come to him and ask his forgiveness for when we've disobeyed him. So parents need to be intentional about this and not just leave it to other people. But if we have brought our children up, trained them in the way they should go, then God promises, verse 6, that when they're old, they won't depart from it. They won't turn from it. And that's something that I, as a parent, often pray before God. Lord God, I have tried to train up my children in the way that they should go. I've tried. You know that I've been a terrible parent. You know that I've failed in all kinds of ways. I've done as best as I could. I tried to be disciplined when I disciplined them. And I try to teach them that they needed to say sorry and that they need your forgiveness as well. Please, Lord, please, as they grow up now, please don't let them depart from the way that I've tried to teach them. I've tried to teach them about your son, Jesus. Please, lead them to him. And every parent can identify with that if they care for their children spiritually. May God help each one of us to see that promise fulfilled in our own children and grandchildren. And may God help us ourselves to be His children, trusting in Him, who would show us the way to go forever.